I'm Reverend Lisa Day, minister of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah. Welcome to our weekly radio program, where you'll hear a segment from one of our recent services recorded at our church on beautiful Troop Square. We invite you to join us Sundays at 11 a.m. in person or via live stream on Zoom. You can find the Zoom link and more about Unitarian Universalism in Savannah at our website, uusavannah.org. We hope you enjoy today's program.
Good morning.
I'm Abby Powell, and I'll be serving as worship associate today. Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah. Our minister, Reverend Lisa Day, is our worship leader this morning. Sandy Mucci will bring our Love at the Center moment. Our worship, religious education, and covenant group theme for April is Embracing Possibility. Here at the UU Church of Savannah, we are working to build a diverse, multicultural, and beloved community. We celebrate the presence and participation of people of all races, genders, sexual orientations, abilities, and ethnic and national origins. We warmly welcome you on YouTube and here on site, whoever you know yourself to be, and wherever you are on your journey. If you're visiting with us this morning and you would like to introduce yourself, please rise or raise your hand and Mary will bring a microphone to you. As part of our commitment to accessibility, we use microphones wherever anyone speaks so that everyone in the sanctuary and watching on YouTube can hear. So do we have any visitors who would like to say hello on this side of the room? Okay. Any visitors on this side of the room? All right. Well, welcome to everyone. Okay. If you're looking for a new faith community, we encourage you to visit several times to get a feel for our worship style and our approach to matters of faith and religion. It's good to have all of you with us. Please join us in Ron Hall for refreshments following the service. You'll find Ron Hall in the next building that way by following the crowd through this door or through the main entry, or you can just ask the ushers. There are two cards in the pew back in front of you to help us gather information for the good of our community. You can use the QR code on the Rainbow Chalice card to sign up for our newsletter and to receive a welcome letter from our minister, or if you prefer, fill the card out by hand. The card with the red heart and chalice is for sharing a joy or a sorrow. If you fill out either of these cards, please put it in the collection plate as it comes around during the offertory. After the story for all ages and the offering, we sing short responses. The lyrics are printed in the order of service. Church announcements are emailed to friends and members on Tuesdays and Fridays. Check your email for complete details about the following. We want to congratulate our former UUCS member, Judy Gauthier, who won last Sunday's coffee drawing. This week, let's hear from current members or friends or visitors who worship with us on YouTube. Text or email Reverend Lisa Day to be entered into a drawing for a gift card to a coffee shop in your city. Her phone number was in the Friday email blast and the April newsletter. Her email address is minister@uusavannah.org. Our next announcement is in the form of a video. And on May 3rd, the youth group is leading the service. So it's a wear your t-shirt, a t-shirt that shows your values. And Francis is going to start the video.
Show your values, they reflect your faith.
This will be a youth group led service, Sunday, May 3rd. Remember to be there. Wear your t-shirt.
All right. May 3rd, wear your t-shirt. And Sandy Mucci has an announcement about an exciting fundraiser.
You know, they say once a flower child, always a flower child. And there's no such thing as too many beads or too many bracelets. I'm here today to share the Flower Power. Our new 4-week fundraiser is built on selling bulbs, flower bulbs. And the company we have partnered with will ship them directly to your location at the right time for planting. It's exciting that snowbirds in our midst can fully participate. Also, since this is done through a UU Savannah-specific website, we can share the link with everyone we know who likes flowers, and who doesn't like flowers, wherever they are. This is powerful. We, the church, will receive 50% of the sales, which alone is exciting. But since this is Flower Power, and we have great friends, there is more. Mary Garofalo and Bob Vaccaro are providing a match challenge. This means that when we spend $20, UU Savannah receives $30. Powerful indeed. There's a QR code in your program, there will be links in the newsletter, and everyone who buys bulbs will be entered into a drawing, and two lucky people will receive beautiful hand-thrown flower pot. And most importantly, it feels so good to be supporting our beautiful church, community, and all our programs. Feeling groovy yet? Flower Power. Everyone doing a little. Everyone is welcome. Send that link far out.
With the lighting of our chalice, symbol of our Unitarian Universalist faith, we enter into sacred time. Our chalice lighter this morning is Ellis Thomas. And our chalice lighting words are by Deborah Falk. The chalice lit among us is a beacon of hope in a world in crisis, a beacon of possibility made manifest in community, a beacon of warmth through our interconnections, a beacon of light illuminating our shared wisdom, a beacon of connection by our being together.
Welcome to a new story. Welcome to a day unwritten. We gather to speak of possibility. We remember the losses. We celebrate the victories. We embrace the possible over the probable, weaving a story of hope. Join us in the new story. Join us in the day unwritten. Join us in the future of possibility.
Spreading the Ashes, an essay from my collection under the title Widowing. John and I created a list of places to spread his ashes when it was clear he was losing his battle with cancer. Each conversation ended with him saying, "Oh, whatever you want to do is fine with me." Simple enough, but until put into action. I picked John's ashes up with a friend. The 12-inch square box containing the plastic bag closed with a metal clip and identified with a metal tag is heavier than you might think, yet small and light when considering it contains the entire physical remains of the person you loved, still love. I purchased four glass spice jars that seemed the right size, and two friends put on plastic gloves and filled them while I took a walk. I'm fortunate in my friends. I saved some ashes for my daughter, who wasn't sure why, but just in case. I filled a small plastic bag for her and another for myself, since I'd thought of another place to spread his ashes. So many decisions and steps involved. June 2017. Alone, I scattered some ashes under the mountain laurel in the backyard. John loved that shrub with its dark pink fading to white fairy dress-shaped flowers, a birthday gift from his girls. The spring he planted it, a bear came into our yard and sat on it. For years afterwards, John would point and explain with a laugh, "See that bush over there with a big dent in it? That's where the bear sits." July 2017. The lake is cool and blue, embraced by mountains that are green and not particularly tall. On this day, everything glistened and shone under the bridge, under the bright sun and the cloudless sky. I stood on the dock with my daughters while my son-in-law wrapped his arm around the box containing the remaining ashes. "Come on, John, let's go for a boat ride." I repeated the Robert Frost poem I had recited at his life celebration 2 days earlier in the same location. Then, full of people sharing stories and enjoying the music, now just the four of us completing another step. Nature's first green is gold. Her heart is hue to hold. Her early leaf's a flower, but only so an hour. Then leaf subsides to leaf, so Eden sank to grief. So dawn goes down to day, nothing gold can stay. As the ashes sank through the clear water to the rocky bottom, a current picked them up and spread them out in a bloom. Fish swam up and nibbled the treat. John would have loved being fish food. August 2017. I arranged a luncheon for my friends as a thank you for all the support during John's illness and death on what would have been our 45th wedding anniversary. In 1972, we were married on top of a mountain on the front lawn of a state called the Castle in the Clouds. Our reception was held in the stables. The head table was in front of the enormous fieldstone fireplace. Other tables were set in the stalls of these very fancy stables. Now, lunch is offered on what was the paddock, accessed through the stables with a breathtaking view over its fieldstone walls. After lunch, we toured the main house and grounds. I showed my friends the room overlooking the front lawn where my sisters and I dressed while watching the guests gather below. The view of Lake Winnipesaukee, spread out in all its summer glory, was the same, timeless. We walked down the stairs and out across the lawn, as I had done with my father all those years ago. My friends surrounded me at the spot where John and I had married, so no one would know what I was doing. Quoting the Frost poem, I emptied the spice container over the wall to the thicket below. It felt a little criminal. I heard John laughing. September 2019. The next jar went to Italy. Again, it felt a little criminal to be secreting the spice jar while packing for the trip. After walking along the canals and over the bridges, my friend and I arrived at a spot John and I had found when we visited Venice the year before he became ill, a park at the tip of the island with an ancient stone wall along the ocean. I began reciting the Frost poem as I opened the spice jar and tipped it upside down to release the ashes. A few flew out, but most were stuck. I pounded the bottom of the jar with my open palm, saying, "Come on, John, it's time to go." It emptied, finally, and my friend sang Blowing in the Wind as we headed back to the train station to watch the traffic on the canals while drinking an Aperol spritz. John would have had two. July 2022, a trip to Cape Cod, and the second-to-last jar was emptied with a Frost poem. I was alone, remembering the year we fell in love and the day we saw whales from this beach. Nothing gold can stay. I felt his warm embrace as I stood looking out at the horizon. July 2023. My daughter finally decided to spread the ashes set aside for her. The location was where the family always sat for the 4th of July fireworks. Naturally, I quoted the Frost poem and we all cried. John would have pretended he wasn't crying. There's one jar left destined for Mendocino. There are many stories left. This process of saying goodbye has created the energy I've needed to move forward. The end was indelibly marked with a date and a time. Meanwhile, the final ritual of acknowledging the loss and returning to the task of living lingers on. Spreading the ashes and continuing to spread them allows me to stave off the finality of the last goodbye. When all the ashes are gone, I'll continue to share the stories and memories because I don't see a final goodbye. Neither would John.
Thank you, Sandy, for sharing your essay. We've been lucky to hear a range of Love at the Center offerings, and we'd love to hear from you. Please check the Friday or Tuesday blast for a link to sign up for a Sunday in May or June. And now it's our invitation to generosity. We give to remind ourselves how many gifts we have to offer. We give to remember that we are part of something bigger than ourselves. We give because we believe in music and sacred space. We give with the faith that together we have enough, and that's by Kristen Collins. To donate via debit or credit card, please use the QR code on the back of the order of service, or you can go to the church's website and click the donate button. Mail checks are also welcome. Our offering will now be gratefully received. Thank you for your generosity. As a faith community, we hold one another's joys and sorrows as if they were our own. We have a joy from Hannah Parton. After a lengthy, years-long job search process, my mom has just accepted a wonderful position with the Forsyth County Public Library System. It's been a challenging and dark few years, but light, joy, and spring are finally here. And today is Non-Binary Parents Day. It is a joy to remember and acknowledge that parenting doesn't have binary gender restrictions. And I am encouraged by the election results in Hungary.
Yeah.
Let us hold all our joys and sorrows, spoken and unspoken, in our hearts as we join together in the responsive reading found in your order of service. Sorrow is everywhere.
Yet joy is to be born.
As we mourn together,
so we celebrate together.
And offer thanks
that we are not alone.
So may it be, now and in all the days to come.
Let us enter into a spirit of meditation. The words of meditation this morning are from Aurora Levens Morales. Say these words when you lie down and when you rise up, when you go out and when you return, in times of mourning and in times of joy. Inscribe them on your doorposts, embroider them on your garments, tattoo them on your shoulders. Teach them to your children, your neighbors, your enemies. Recite them in your sleep, here in the cruel shadow of empire. Another world is possible. Thus spoke the prophet Rock Dalton. Altogether they have more death than we, but altogether we have more life than they. There is more bloody death in their hands than we could ever wield unless we lay down our souls to become them, and then we will lose everything. So instead, imagine winning. This is your sacred task. This is your power. Imagine every detail of winning, the exact smell of the summer streets in which no one has been shot. The muscles you have never unclenched from worry, gone soft as newborn skin. The sparkling taste of food when we know that no one on earth is hungry, that the beggars are fed, that the old man under the bridge and the woman wrapping herself in thin sheets in the back seat of a car and the children who suck on stones nest under a flock of roofs that keep multiplying their shelter. Lean with all your being toward that day when the poor of the world shake down a rain of good fortune out of heavy clouds and justice rolls down like water. Defend the world in which we win as if it were your child. It is your child. Defend it as if it were your lover. It is your lover. When you inhale and when you exhale, breathe the possibility of another world into the 37.2 trillion cells of your body until it shines with hope. Then imagine more. Imagine rape is unimaginable. Imagine war is a scarcely credible rumor, that the crimes of our age, the grotesque inhumanities of greed, the sheer and astounding shamelessness of it, the vast fortunes made by stealing lives, the horrible normalcy of it, the horrible normalcy it came to have, is unimaginable to our heirs, the generation of the free. Don't waver. Don't let despair sink its sharp teeth into the throat with which you sing. Escalate your dreams. Make them burn so fiercely that you can follow them down any dark alleyway of history and not lose your way. Make them burn clear as a starry drinking gourd over the grim fog of exhaustion and keep walking. Hold hands, share water, keep imagining, so that we and the children of our children's children may live. Our first reading this morning is actually three short poems from a marvelous book called Dictionary for a Better World, Poems, Quotes, and Anecdotes from A to Z by Irene Latham and Charles Waters. Hope. Fierce camel carries us across deserts without faltering. Thick eyelashes batting sand, hoofs steadily clomping toward oasis, shimmering its promise. All travelers welcome. I forgot to mention that each poem is a different version, a different genre of poetry, and the book tells you, explains to you what it is and the syllables and where it comes from. It's really quite marvelous. And the next poem, Reach, is a form of poem that's inspired by a work of art, and this one is inspired by the creation of Adam, where a god in Adam's fingertips reaching toward one another. Reach. To live in this moment before touch, in the breath between fingers, where what comes before or after ceases to matter, to risk rebuke, rebuff, rejection, to risk falling, failing, to fall, all for the possibility of rising together. And tenacity. Tenacity is bursting with determination, burrowing under enemy lines like a gopher, stuffing positive words, belief, strength, willpower into its large cheek pouches, refusing to allow other words, can't, no, quit, to blight its soul. Tenacity excavates hard lessons along its part. Traps, dead ends, floods. Tenacity will never stop trudging across Earth's deep, ragged, rich soil. And our final reading from Shanae Pugh, Sometimes. Sometimes things don't go, after all, from bad to worse. Some years, muscadel faces down frost. Green thrives, the crops don't fail. Sometimes one aims high and all goes well. A people will sometimes step back from war Elect an honest person. Decide they care enough that they can't leave some stranger poor. Some become what they were born for. Sometimes our intentions do not go amiss. Sometimes we do as we are meant to. The sun will... Do you remember last week's benediction from the Rolling Stones? It was also a prologue to this morning's sermon, so say it with me. You can't always get what you want, but if you try sometimes, you just might find you get what you need. May it be so for each of you and for this holy community. We are living in a time of not getting what we want. Every day, almost every hour of every day. On a societal level, we want peace in the Middle East, in Ukraine, in our neighborhoods, security, national stability, economic predictability. And frankly, we're not even finding we get what we need, not very often. Affordable groceries, perhaps, or relief at the gas pump. On individual level, we may want deep, abiding and mostly tranquil love with a primary partner, good health, steady employment at meaningful work, time for leisure, friends with whom to spend that time, and all of these things for children and grandchildren and others whom we love. And we probably don't always get these things we want, though we might sometimes get what we need. Employment that earns us enough money to get by, even if it's not especially meaningful or satisfying. A love that lasts for a season, if not forever. Some of these things, some of the time, for some of the people we love. Here at church, on a level somewhere between the societal and the individual, we may want things the way they were back last fall, before a careful, difficult decision made by our board, our democratically elected board, allowed us to begin to come to terms with the reality that not every member of this congregation has always been kind and generous to other members and volunteers and staff. Back before, those who were unhappy about that decision withdrew their participation from committees, their presence at worship, their financial support. Back before gossip and lies ran rampant. Some of us may even want things back the way they were longer ago than last fall, back when Reverend Dave was minister and Kelly Blackmore was music director, or before the pandemic when we still ended each service holding hands. Some of us may want a congregation that is governed by a committee of the whole, with every one of us having a vote on every decision ever made in the running of the church, choosing each hymn every Sunday, what lessons are taught in RE, the brand of paper towels, the content posted on our social medias. Some of us may want a congregation that never experiences any conflict, or a congregation that's more like that perfect congregation we used to be members of before we moved to Savannah. Heck, even I want this congregation to offer me an 8-room parsonage with a screen porch like the last one I served. And some of us, most of us, want this congregation to thrive, conflict, changes, imperfections, and all. And we're not all going to get all or even most of those things we want. Though in this case, if we stick with it, if we try, we just might find we do get what we need. A place of radical welcome found few other places in Chatham County. A haven for learning and deepening, as well as a launch pad for going into the world to do justice. A congregation of flawed people committed to one another and to the institution, some of whom made their first pledge ever this spring, and the majority of whom pledged either at or above the amount they pledged last year. not despite the recent broken trust and disappointment, but because their love, because your love is greater than broken trust and disappointments. Sometimes things don't go, after all, from bad to worse. Sometimes one aims high and all goes well. A people sometimes will step back from war. Sometimes our best intentions do not go amiss. Sometimes we do as we are meant to. Shanae Pugh's Sometimes has been one of my go-to hope texts for many, many years. This week, I learned that the poem is a source of ongoing dissatisfaction and frustration for the poet, who wrote, "It was originally written about a sportsman who had a drug problem, and it expressed the hope that he might eventually get over it, because things do go right sometimes, but not very often. But it isn't anywhere near skillful or subtle enough, and I would cheerfully disown it if people didn't now and then write to me saying it had helped them. By the way, you might also care to know that I originally wrote the sun will sometimes melt a field of snow because the sportsman's drug of choice was cocaine, but I mistyped sorrow for snow, and then I decided I liked that better. I believe in letting the keyboard join in the creative process now and then." She continues, "I think most people read it wrong. When read carefully, it says sometimes things go right, but not that often, and usually only when people make some kind of effort in that direction. So it isn't blithely and unreasonably optimistic. But a lot of people read it that way, which means I didn't write it well enough. The writer can always make readers see what they want them to see if they do the job right." I've always read this poem as a message of hope, not blithe, unreasonable optimism. I think one of the spiritual gifts Unitarian Universalism has given me, and perhaps you, is a lens so laser-focused on hope that straying into blithe, unreasonable optimism is a rarity. There was that 19th century Unitarian belief in the progress of mankind onward and upward forever. But then we lived through the early decades of the 20th century and eventually all of the 20th century and realized that onward and upward forever was perhaps not assured. Still, though we abandoned that bit of unreasonable optimism, we haven't let go of a significant and influential Unitarian statement of hope also from the 19th century. Theodore Parker's observation, later paraphrased by the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and President Barack Obama, "I do not pretend to understand the moral universe. The arc is a long one. My eye reaches but little ways. I cannot calculate the curve and complete the figure by the experience of sight. I can divine it by conscience. But from what I see, I am sure it bends toward justice. Things refuse to be mismanaged long." Hope, but in the long view. Sometimes, not often, but sometimes. You know how sometimes when you start thinking about something, it shows up everywhere? In one day this past week, I heard part of a discussion about the difference between optimism and toxic positivity, as well as part of a discussion about whether it is the musical artist's task to speak to the real and present horrors of the current moment or to provide pockets of joy in the midst of the real and present horrors of the current moment. A contemporary echo of E.B. White's famous declaration, "I arise in the morning torn between a desire to improve the world and a desire to enjoy the world. This makes it hard to plan the day." It is, I believe, the minister's job, and not just the minister's, but also the person of faith's job, to be on guard against toxic positivity or blithe, unreasonable optimism, and to hold the competing desires to save and enjoy the world in delicate, flexible, resilient tension, letting neither crowd out the other. To speak to the real and present horrors and to create pockets of joy. To be the camel of hope and the burrowing creature of tenacity, all the while risking falling, failing to fall, all for the possibility of rising together. In just over 2 weeks, it will be 24 years since my dad died. Perhaps that's why he's popping into my sermon a second week in a row. When we knew that he was statistically unlucky, that he would be one of the few men to die from prostate cancer, he told us, "It will be okay." It wasn't okay. He died at 63, having not lived many of the years he retired early to enjoy with Mom. He didn't watch my niece and nephews grow up. He didn't meet my daughter. We were heartbroken then. A hole remains in our lives now. And it was okay. We, my siblings, Mom and I, had each other, my siblings' spouses and children. We had Dad's mother and his two sisters and my mom's sister and their families. We had the church community he and Mom had raised us in. We had memories, we had experiences and values and wisdom, good examples and poor ones that continue to shape and inform our lives. The world and we in it were okay because he had lived and because he gave us permission to be okay before he died. It wasn't the okay we wanted or had envisioned, but it was okay. We didn't get what we wanted, but we found we got what we needed. The unwavering love of family and friends, lives infused with Dad's essence even in his absence. And as I spoke of at Bill's memorial service yesterday, the reminder to live our days and years so as to leave as little unfinished business at their end as possible. When I suggested in this morning's sermon title that we embrace the possibility that it will be okay, that's the okay I had in mind. On the other side of the ongoing destruction of what we have known or believed our country to be, on the other side of the disquiet of the past 5 months in this congregation, on the other side of whatever personal crises might now beset any one of us, or the crises that will inevitably come, or even somehow still in the midst of all of that, we may find that we and the world around us are okay. Not the okay we wanted, not the okay we envisioned, but okay nevertheless. Near the end of Emily St. John Mandel's post-apocalyptic novel, Station 11, one character, knowing that the main character was fascinated with stories of the days long past when human-harnessed and managed electricity still existed, brought her to a high point after dark and guided her vision off toward the horizon where light shone in a grid. It is a powerful scene. It's a powerful scene, and I think it is intended as a hopeful moment. But it sits uneasily with me because throughout the rest of the brutal, beautiful novel, what hope there was came through relationships, unlikely alliances, community. And I believe that whenever we find ourselves in an experience or period of vast and deep not okayness, those are the things that will usher us back to okayness. Relationships, unlikely alliances, and community. Communities that span generations, communities that arise out of moments, Communities that emerge from the forge of conflict and hardship brighter, stronger, more brilliant than ever before. Communities like this congregation. It will be okay. Pam Munoz Ryan wrote, "No matter how much sadness there is in life, there are equal amounts of maybe things will get better someday soon. Today is someday soon. Go forth now to recognize, to embrace, to inhabit the okayness of this very moment. Amen."
Amen.
This is Reverend Lisa Day. I hope you've enjoyed this program from the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah. Please join us at one of our services sometime soon at our church on Troop Square or live on Zoom. We're the beacon of liberal religion in Savannah, and you can find out more at uusavannah.org. We meet on Sundays at 11 a.m. Thanks for listening.